This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth gear for all types of weather, all types of terrain, all types of budgets. It's clothing that just works. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. So today's podcast, we are talking to Greg Litzinger about the decision-making process in being intentional about your shooting, your scouting. And then we kind of go off into the weeds about just bows and everything in general, but kind of things to be looking for if you're scouting right now, if you're focusing on hunting, being intentional about shooting, all that sort of stuff. So some great information in here about like actually being purposeful with your shooting and out in the woods. So I know you guys are going to like this one. Greg is always a great guy. We're really going to be, he's going to be missed up at the Total Archery Challenge this year. So that's why I wanted to bring him on and kind of chat. Just got the bows built for the Total Archery Challenge. So we'll have some video of that coming up here pretty soon. John's got to just paper tune those, but pretty interesting stuff. Just looking at the differences in the bows, especially side by side, and the specs are pretty close. I mean, they weigh just about the same, but now we're looking at things like string angle, the grip, kind of like where the balance points are and all that sort of stuff. So it's very interesting. We do still have our Tailgate Ready Challenge going on. So go over to our Instagram, you know, follow Travis, follow Canadian Zinger, and tag a buddy, and you can win a set of Zinger arrows, Canadi arrows rather, as well as 10 shots, 11 shots at the truck for the Total Archery Challenge here in Michigan. So definitely go check that out. Go over to Latitude. They have their Rebel platforms back in stock, as well as now they've got their new knee pads, and they're available in tan, so not just that gray color that they'd been available in the past. So definitely go check those out. You can use code BHE to save 15%, and we got to thank obviously Huntworth, Big Shot Targets. You can save 10% over there with BCP. Canadi Zinger, we talked about them. Genesis 3D, there is a code for Patreons there, as well as our friends over at Lucky Buck. So thanks everybody to all of our, for supporting all of our sponsors, our partners, all that, as well as supporting us through Patreon and, you know, everything that, that comes with doing this podcast. We really do appreciate you guys. As always, enjoy the episode. All right, everybody. Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. And I have my good friend here, Greg Litzinger, and it's a very somber conversation leading up to this. You know, we're for the past 2 years, he's been up at the Total Archery Challenge with us. And I feel like it's kind of become his crowd. You know, he's become one of the guys up there. And so I know that he's going to be like sorely missed. And I don't think it's because he doesn't want to be there. If you're watching this on the video, he's got a brace on his left arm. But I wanted to bring him on here to kind of talk about, like, I think most people, when they see like a podcast with Greg, they're like, oh, he's this guy from Jersey who's, you know, all tattooed up. He kills these deer. And that's what it kind of was like bringing him into our, the house for TAC. Is like, actually, Greg's a, you know, pretty accomplished archer as well, not just as a hunter. And, you know, Greg came, you know, and shot with us, but it wasn't him just shooting. And I think that it's resonated, especially through the group, that he's helped me a lot, in my shooting, even years before he came up to Michigan. And then like a lot of the other guys, like I know Chris Langlois and Jake, you know, he really worked with those guys in their shooting as well. So I just kind of wanted to tap into that side of Greg as we are, you know, a lot of guys are shooting 3D right now and all the Total Archery Challenges are kind of kicking off. Some of them are already done, but with all of that type of thing. And then now we've got Greg, who's, you know, not only, you know, a bow hunter, you know, with full of angst, I think that's why he bow hunts, not because, you know, anything else, but a competition archer and all that stuff. And now you can't shoot your bow, right? Yeah. So how does that sit with you? Or like, where's your like motivation at the moment? Like, where are you placing that?
It sucks like hardcore. Because I've never had like injuries like to my hands where I can't like do stuff. I've had a lot of injuries elsewhere, you know, like my knees, feet, stuff like that. Like even when I had my jacked up shoulder, I could still shoot just light poundage. And now not being able to shoot is a place I've never been. Like I don't think I've gone this long without shooting my bow since, well, I was like 12 years old, probably. You know, it's been December, January, February, March, what, 6 months now? Like, that's a long time not to shoot. You know, it's like, so for me mentally, it's just trying to keep myself occupied and look at the bright side of this situation, which it's not really bright, but it's about as bright as it's going to get for me right now. So for me mentally, it's just trying to prepare myself for starting shooting maybe in August, you know, if I'm lucky, you know. So it's just not a place I thought I'd be at 46 years old. And having, you know, this and not only this, but like family, career, like jobs, like it's a whole monster to try and not let my brain run wild and take me in directions that don't need to go. You know, I'm no stranger to pain and misery, I guess, rehab and stuff like that. But this one is going to probably be the as challenging as any I've had physically and like and mentally, you know, because, you know, like, this being in a brace, like my forearms disappeared. I didn't have big forearms to begin with. You know, there's nothing there to lose. And it's like, you put them side by side. It's like, this one's like, there's nothing there. And it's like, there's just nothing. I'm just like melting away. And it's like, cool. All right. So, gaining weight that I don't want to gain. can't really do much. And just being home and no routine. I didn't realize like how much I missed having a routine, getting up and having to go places and do stuff.
That's why all the retirees end up like the greeter at Walmart, or like they're like the bagger at Costco or whatever.
I don't know how, like, even if I could retire, like at this age, people are like, oh, I retired at 46. It's like, I don't know. Like, cause like my kids would be in school. I would have to be so like, have so many things. I'm like, it'd be like almost like a job. It's like, might as well just go to work, you know? Cause it's like, I need to be doing something. And the fact that I can't really do much, you know, around the house, you know, around the yard, like the old lady, like she's doing it all. So I'm sure I'm annoying her pretty extensively. The banker lady, as you say.
Yeah. I don't know if I said that on the podcast, but like I fully expected like Greg's wife to look like Greg. And when if you're like watching this, like I said, Greg's in a cutoff with tattoos all over and all this stuff. And I'm like, his wife's got to have like blue hair and like look like Marilyn Manson or something. And like, not at all. Nope. Like,
he's clean.
Yeah.
As you say, a bank, your wife's like a banker.
I was so taken aback. I was like, who is this woman touching Greg's kids? Like, that can't be his wife. Like,
stranger. That's his daughter.
But in that, I mean, from like the archery side, you know, we just did a podcast, just came back from the HHA event with veterans and first responders and all that, talking about like the therapeutic side of archery, right? And it's a place to go to kind of clear your head from all of this stuff. And I've been trying to get Greg to shoot like with a mouth tab with his other hand, or to, you know, something. And we were just talking about him shooting left-handed, like when he had his shoulder surgery. And it's like, what's preventing you like from doing that in all this time that you have nothing to do?
I think I maybe come August, if there's wrist is a problem, you know, then maybe a mouth tap could possibly, like I said, be in the works. But at the same time, you know, like I don't want to, like, I look at it like a, you know, if I, my wrist is an issue come August, you know, is hunting, being able to get in the woods the top priority of my life. So it's like, you know, if I can't shoot a bow, that probably means I can't climb a tree. You know, like there's a lot of other variables put into the mix. So it's like, maybe I got to just shelf hunting, you know, bow hunting, you know, maybe go out, just sit on the ground with a camera or something, you know, and be one of those guys this year. So I think hunting's important to me, but like the longevity, like job and, you know, keeping my house in order is kind of taking precedent right now over shooting. As much as I want to shoot, and I think that's as you get older, you know, you got to pick and choose what priority is priority one, you know, and as much as I want to shoot, I have to look at the bigger picture.
Oh yeah. No, I don't disagree with you there. And I'm not necessarily even talking, I'm almost like talking it more about like the therapeutic thing. And yeah, like one of the things I wanted to talk about was like from a like competitive archery standpoint. And I know if I recall, you got into it because of like target panic, and you were just trying to shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. But I feel like, and especially after being like at that event and just seeing like the therapeutic side of archery and what it's done for people who have no like inclination to hunt. And I think it's funny that we, you know, kind of have come back to this because we talked about it at the first time you went to the Total Archery Challenge in Michigan, and you're like, these dudes in Michigan are hunters. They're not like, there's a lot, you know, but there are people who just shoot archery for the archery portion of it, not as a hunting thing. And so that's one of the questions I had for you with, you know, the amount of time and commitment and everything that it takes to compete at a high level in anything, let alone archery, but prioritizing like scouting, hunting side of archery versus just shooting spots and all that sort of stuff. So how do you, I mean, I guess when you were doing that, how did you prioritize your time as far as like hunting and archery? And I think we're kind of back there again.
Well, you know, I would literally train. I'd shoot my bow every day, you know? So it was like, I literally, you know, I had my weeks, months planned out in advance, you know? So it was like, I'm shooting here. You know, every Sunday I'd have my shooting schedule, you know, and where I'm shooting on the Sundays, you know, month in advance, what tournaments I'm shooting. And, I just was just shoot, you know, wasn't shooting, you know, like pre-kids and pre-wife, I was in the woods. If I wasn't working, I was shooting or I was in the woods. That's pretty much my life revolved around. And believe it or not, that's when I was the most efficient with my time. It's when I was killing the most deer. You know, I was very strict with my time. And now, you know, as kids and a wife, I don't have that ability to put my self out there like that as much as I want to, because now like the local clubs around me are they're doing it up. All kinds of, there's some money shoots, all of these things that was not around when I was really getting into it. And it was like, it's just when like last year something happened. I was going to shoot the league and I don't know, life happened. And then now like the rest this year, it was like, I watched. When I come back, you know, healed finally, that'll probably be gone. And it'll just be like it was before, like it never existed. But yeah, shooting was that, you know, I didn't really have a life outside of anything. Like, shooting was my life. Like hunting related stuff was my life. I would spend a lot of time alone, like travel to the world, drove by myself, you know, drive down, you know, I would shoot Maryland states. I mean, Virginia states, I would drive. It was like 6 hours, 7 hours. I would drive down, leave at like 2 a.m, shoot, and then drive home because I had to work Sunday. So it was like, it was very, you know, my life revolved around three things. That was it. You know, like the, so structured and so detailed, you know, like my days were planned out. I had planners, and it was like those planners that go from like, they start at like 5 a.m. to go to like 10 p.m. I had daily planners, like my day was just, and I could just look at it, you know, I was working two jobs at the time too. So it's like, I'm working my job plus a job at night and doing all this other stuff. So it was like my life pretty much revolved around just trying to get better at shooting, which maybe get better at deer hunting, because shooting, wanting to get better at shooting kind of just with the coach I had and the methods he was teaching me, it just made me a better person in my job, which made me a better person in the woods. It's kind of made me, you know, a better person all around, trying to get better here. You know, like a lot of people are so focused on like on the end with hunting. They're just focused on, it's what we become when we're chasing something. It makes us valuable. You know, you can kill a million, you know, 180 inch deer every year. But if you're just not a nice person, you kind of like, at least for me, you're missing like that, the journey to that deer or the medals or whatever you're after.
Yeah. So how are the two intertwined? Because I think that, I guess I've always felt like, you know, there's like two types of people. There's people that kind of like enjoy that, the journey. And then there's the people that like are solely focused on the end.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of what you're saying is by intertwine, like I guess focusing on shooting made you a better hunter. Can you like expand on that? Because it seems like, you know, we've got guys that are really focused on like archery and shooting, and sometimes they make excuses to not go in the woods, or they don't spend, you know, we're all human. We have only so many hours, and especially in today's like fast paced society where you've always got to be doing something, you're missing out, or you're seeing social media about all the things that you should be doing, or, and it can pull you in a million different directions. Well, that
I think social media definitely is not a plus, I guess, for some people, because you're just wasting hours, minutes, precious minutes or hours a day, which could add up. You could be training, you know, like you can be doing something. Like, I didn't have social media when I was doing that. I didn't have Facebook. I didn't have none of that. So it's like when I was really in it, it was just me and books. You know, I was reading 3 books a month. You know, I had like, but that's just me. Like, I think it's like user specific. You know, I think for me, with my coach, like I had a really good coach. I think that was partly why I got as good as I did in a short amount of time, I guess, because it didn't really take me long to start seeing results because my coach kept me disciplined. You know, I wasn't self-taught, you know, how to become a better shooter. Like my coach definitely helped me, and it really wasn't the shooting that helped me with. It was all the other stuff that goes with shooting, you know, like the mental part. And I think that's why, you know, when I was really getting it in.
Are you overwhelmed by the hundreds of food plot mixes out there? Well, you are not alone. And Vitalized Seed has developed a program that takes the guesswork out of food plotting. Vitalized makes it simple with their 2 core mixes, Nitro Boost and Carbon Load. Nitro Boost is their spring-summer food plot mix, and Carbon Load is for planting in the fall, each having a diverse mix of over a dozen seed types that are highly attractive to whitetail. Food plotting made simple. Each mix provides necessary nutrients to the soil, making for better plots each season. This also saves you money by needing less Roundup and fertilizer every year. The 1-2 system simplifies your food plots just how nature intended. And for the more advanced habitat managers, Vitalize also offers a variety of natural amendments with products like their seed feed that offer seeds immediately available minerals ready as soon as they germinate. Make biology work for you. Order now at vitalizeseed.com.
It just, I became a better hunter because like the mental part, the process part, I guess you call it, of trying to become a better archer. You know, it wasn't about shooting an X. You know, it was like you work on, every month I'd work on a different goal. Different goal, and you would just be, I'd just be steady stack, and you had 12, you know, 12 different goals basically a month. I would say probably 8 different goals a year, I guess, you know, because I work on this, I go for this. And for me, like I said, the goal wasn't, when I set out and I got, but the coach wasn't to win tournaments or to do this. The goal was to become a, you know, I was rushing my shots. You know, I hate using the word target panic because that's a myth made up by a liar. Doesn't exist. You know, I think too much for a broad stroke. You know, like I met Dave, you know, I told him I was just rushing my shots, shooting deer in the guts, you know, with the old, and you know, wrist rocket. And he was like, well, all right, we're going to get you a hinge. We're going to do this, you know. And the goal wasn't to become a better archer, to become a better hunter. And then I shot some 3D, and every week, you know, go through everything. And then it's like, I got really good at estimating with my bow, my hunting bow. And I was shooting these courses that were, they'd have state championships. And I would shoot them like the following week, like the same course, basically. It was like, I'm shooting 295s, you know, with a hunting bow, hunting arrow, like no speed, just estimation was like really good. So he was like, do you want to compete? And I was like, yeah. And then once I said I wanted to compete, like I thought I had the stuff, it was like a switch. Like it just, I became like so laser focused on getting better. You know, it wasn't necessarily, you know, the shoot X's, but to become a better, working on the mental part. You know, when I left the course, it was like, I'm okay with what happened, whatever happened. You know, it was like, it wasn't about, you know, I wasn't focused on the results. I was focused on the process. And that pretty much just goes in with the deer. You know, if you're so focused on shooting a 140, you're kind of missing, you know, what's that? Putting the cart before the horse. Is that what they say? You know, it's like, you know, big deer will come if you focus on the process. You know, if you're focused on the end result, you know. And again, I didn't have trail cameras back then too, so it was like that was probably a plus. I didn't know what else. I was just targeting big tracks and big buck sign. I'd never seen those deer until the moment I shot them. So it was like I didn't have these, you know, a trail camera picture to get me, you know, off my game, so to speak. But I think it was like for me, just shooting, become a better hunter and better archer, but like the whole process, and it just the shooting, you know, the process, becoming a better shooter, just leads into hunting and my job, you know, my self-image. Like I didn't realize like I would talk so down on myself, like even just to myself, like driving, like, hey, I'm an asshole, I'm a dick, you know, like the self-sabotage, man. You know, it's like you can't do that. You know, like you miss a bad shot, it's just a shot, man. It's okay. You miss a deer, you're alive, everything's good. You know, it's like, what can you take away from that moment? What good can you get from that? And I think that's where like a good coach comes into play. You know, like my Dave, outside of my father, like Dave's probably like the second most important man I've ever met in my life, you know, because I think we all have the necessary tools to succeed, but we just need that right person to nudge us in the right direction, you know. And negative self-talk, that nobody wants that. Whining and complaining, no, that's not going anywhere, you know. So that's how I think it made me better. They're intertwined, at least for me, you know, like the process. And it's like up here, how you view yourself. You know, you can't make excuses like, oh, I shot like shit today because it's windy. Well, it's windy. At some point in time, the wind's going to blow and the rain's going to, like, there's always things that you can't control. So getting upset, you know, like when I run across another hunter in the woods, I don't get angry. I don't get upset. It's like, just move on to the next spot. You know, like there's some guys that can't let that go. You know, they go in there, somebody's in their spot and it just ruins their day. You know, we all work with those coworkers. One little thing happens and like, they're just like erupting, you know, like a volcano. And you're like, cool. Like, don't ruin my day, dude. Get away from me, you know?
So when you're talking about those monthly goals, right? What are the things that you're working on? Because I think that's what I'd like to kind of focus on. Is like, what should guys be prioritizing?
You know, a list of some things I was working on here. Like giant cards, I'd write down and put them all around the house. One goal for me, you know, this goal here, I had these posts around the house, is be a good time manager. Like I worked on that for like 3 months. I say these little things to myself, you know, 100 times a day. Every time I had one in my truck, one at work in my locker, and every time you run across a cue card, you know, you read it. You know, and after 28 days, sometimes 2 months, it starts to sink in, you know. Another one, let's see, the goal was to, you know, this is going back to 20, horrible handwriting, like 13, wow, 2013, yikes. Self-image improvement, you know, and I put this, you know, the goal, self-improvement, self-image improvement, timeline. I gave myself a date, you know, and I'd have a little plan, but the goal was I deserve my position, you know, on the leaderboard or a podium. I deserve my score and the right to be here. You know, I deserve a positive self-image. You just say that over and over and over again for months on end, you know. Let's see. The goal was to turn obstacles into opportunities. Same thing, you know, let's write this down and just some things here, you know, it's like, I will not allow a difficult situation to alter or change my goals. I accept things as they are. I thrive in adversity. I have horrible handwriting. These glasses are awful. And it makes me a stronger man. You know, I overcome obstacles and turn them into opportunities. You just, little things like this is over, like, so look, it's just dozens and dozens, you know, and the goal is never like, hey, I'm going to kill a big deer. Like, that's a weird goal to, you know, or I want to like, here's one from 2016. It's the last year I was really like shooting as before, like kids and everything. The goal was I will place in the top five at Delaware State IVO Championships date. And the directive affirmation on April 30th, I will place in the top five at Delaware State Championships. I am confident in my abilities to estimate yardage on all color targets, big and small. I run a simple yet consistent mental program and reload effectively after every shot. And just, I would say this day in, day out, day in, day out, you know, and then just have that, those goals around the house. You know, I have one in the mirror in the bathroom, one on the refrigerator, one in my truck. So every time I will come across a goal, I'll just read it out. You know, it's, this method is, the Lanny Basham, Olympic, rifle shooter. That's kind of his method, directive affirmation. You know, you see yourself in possession of the goal. You write it down like you are actually in possession of it. Like, I want to be I. So you start believing what you're reading, you know, and you change how, you know, change how your brain works. But like we said, too many people put the cart before the horse. You know, they want to get, you know, you're basically, you have an issue, especially like target panic. Like if you hold low, it's not target panic. It's you holding low. So if you're a drive-by shooter, it's not target panic. It's you, you know, drive-by shooting. If you're a real finger popper blasting it, it's like, it's not target panic. It's you, target anxiety, performance anxiety. There's so many things that it could be. So people that say they get target panic, it just makes me cringe, man. Because if you had target panic, you know, let's just say you got five spot, a 20-yard five spot. You're all over the place. If you're gonna bring that target 5 feet in front of you, 5 yards in front of you, if you had true target panic, you'd be that shaky at 5 yards, but you're not. You're gonna shake at that 20, 30, 40 distance, you know, whatever it might be. That's not target panic, you know, and it's performance anxiety. You expect something, you know, like you're outcome oriented. You're worried about the X instead of what it takes to get to the X. You know, so I think if people slow it down and focus on the process, what it takes to get an X, or the process, what it takes to kill a big deer, instead of worrying about killing the big deer, put in the work that you need to get here. Just focus on the process. That's all you can control. You can't control the other shooters, the other hunters. You can't control the deer unless you got them tied up to a tree or whatever, you know? So only focus on what you can control and you'll start seeing results in, said, not only like hunting and shooting, but, you know, other aspects of your life.
So
is that too
no,
deep?
No, I think that that's tremendous. But I guess I just want to take it a little bit closer to the surface also, because that's, I mean, it seems to be obviously effective, and I would echo a lot of that stuff in terms of, like, if you just, one of my biggest things, even for basically everybody on the planet, my answer is always like, don't worry about things you can't control. However, there is, both in hunting and in archery, right? And you talked about it there in like passing and just really glossed over it. You said, worry about the process that it takes and the process that it takes. So if I say I deserve to kill a 140 and I put that shit all over everything that if I buy a billboard on my way to work that I drive by every day that says Adam Miller's going to kill 140 on whatever, what is the part of that process with like shooting that's like the first step to get rid of, like, to take action into your own like hands, right? I can write it down as much as I want to,
but you have to It has to be, because I know, like with my coats, I struggled with at the beginning, and even now, like I'm not as good. As many goals as the same thing I've written down, like I'm still not very good. Like I'll still hit my coach lives in Atlanta now. He used to live like 20 minutes away, but I still struggle sometimes writing goals and directive affirmations because it's like, and I get writer's block. And I'll call him up. He goes, he'll say like two words, and it's like, that's it. And it's like, it's just like, I get like a writer's block because I'm not the best with it, you know? So it's like with him and stuff, it's so easy. My coach, he can work with anybody. You know, my sister was working with him when she was competing in bodybuilding because like it's a mental thing. Like, you know, and I had other people reach out to Dave. He's helped people build businesses. You know, he's just very good getting people, no matter if you're rich, poor, whatever it is you want to do, like he can make you better, you know, but he's not necessarily the best with himself, which is the weird, you know, because you look at it, you know, like, he's very successful, but he's not successful as it could be. So it's like, you know, he even struggles with some of this stuff. You know, he's very good teacher, but sometimes teachers don't take their own advice, you know, but like with the process, like you're putting in like an M range, like a 140, but the goal should be to shoot like a mature buck. So then there's your goal. Like I want to shoot a mature buck public land in Michigan, you know, and then what are steps that you would need to take, you know, like then you break it down a little small. Like I want to shoot mature buck, you know, in the early season, you know, all right, that's a different formula than like a rut situation. And you can break down like early season, what do you need to do? Well, you gotta, you know, you gotta be in an area where there's mature deer, first of all, you know? So it's like, you have to put yourself in an area where there's going to be a deer that the caliber you would like to shoot, you know? And then like, all right, October, what are deer doing in October? You need to scout for food and stuff like that, you know? And then come rut, it would be a lot different. So there's a lot of things that you can do. Cause even like, we all have like visions of grandeur every hunt season, you know, and some guys, they can shoot from the hip, you know, like Johnny Stewart, like that dude's just, he's built different, you know, like it's, I wouldn't say it comes easy to him, but he interprets hunting and deer movement a lot different than anybody I've ever met. You know, for him, it's a little easier for him than it is for me. You know, I got to work a little bit harder, a lot harder than him. He just processes things different, you know? So how he processes things won't necessarily work for someone like me, you know, and other, you know, people that are super detail oriented, get confused by Johnny's tactics too. But like, for me, like all these methods that I've done works for how my brain works. You know, I can write an affirmation for you, your guest, on some dude, looking at him, be like, yeah, I don't know, you know, it doesn't click with him. So when you write your goals, they have to be very like user specific, like it is for you. So to shoot a mature deer, all right, you need to scout a lot. So you're going to have to set a lot of time away. And if you're a slow learner, you know, or you can't get out in the woods enough, you know, like for me, when I was really scouting, like my life revolved around deer 100%. Like I said, if I wasn't shooting, I was in the woods. If I wasn't working, shooting, I was sleeping like 3-4 hours a night sometimes. And I'm driving here, scouting, like my life revolved around being in the woods. So I put a lot of time, you know, miles upon miles upon miles. And after like 2 or 3 years, you start to get an idea of what's happened, you know, and you can start putting a plan in play. And yeah, so it's like, just simple, easy things like scouting in the area where there's big deer, you know, and what can you control? All right, I'm a weekend warrior. Okay, well, that changes things. You know, it's like you can hunt. I don't know if you can hunt on Sunday in Michigan. Can you hunt on Sunday in Michigan? Okay, like some states, they don't have that Sunday hunting. So it's like, you guys got Saturdays. Well, then you better be scouting Sunday if you're hunting Saturday, you know, for the following week. Like you have to just sacrifice, you know, and give yourself a plan when you're scouting, even when you're hunting, you know, like always be willing to scout for that sign that you're looking for. You know, if you want to shoot a big deer, like you're gonna have to find big deer sign, big tracks, you know, big rubs. Scrapes can kind of be, you know, wishy-washy unless you get like a big track. So if you're scouting and you're not finding big buck sign, go somewhere else, man. There might be a big buck in there, but he might be so reclusive, he's not leaving but sign. So it's like, is that where your time is best spent? You know, like a lot of guys that go to Midwest, not to knock on people that live in the Midwest or go to Iowa, what these, it's significantly easier because there's this different age class of deer. So a guy that can hunt one day a week, maybe the Midwest is a better choice, a better fit. Take your vacation where there's bigger deer, so it'll be a little bit, you know, an easier process. You know, you Michigan's a tough hunting, you know, Jersey's tough hunting. Sometimes, you know, you gotta try to make it easier on you if you can.
So how do you deal with now, or what tips would you have for people as far as like time management and focus, as far as like the things that you can control? And the reason that I ask that is because I feel like in shooting, like I, you know, I've talked to Joel Turner, I've talked to Andy May, I've talked with you, I've talked with your coach.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody kind of has the same answer, but you have to do it. And I don't know if I thought that everybody was just full of shit, or it was like, but you know, what do you mean? Like, take the sight off your bow. What do you mean? Like, just shoot your bow. And this year with my hinge, and like, you can reach out to Jake and he'll tell you, you know, me shooting the hinge is I can, because I've shot thousands of arrows at 9 yards in my basement on the mini five spots. I'm shooting at like push pins now and holding, and it took forever for me to get used to the click. And then it took me to, you know, we talked about it when we were in PA, but yep, to like working through all that stuff. And now at 100 or at 80 yards, you know, I'm holding for, you know, 6-8 seconds or something, which to you is like, God, that's such a short period of time. But for me, it's an eternity. You know, I'm going through the process. And I think everybody can do that like I do at 10 yards, at 9 yards, you know, in your basement or in your garage or any of these things, to kind of get used to it and get comfortable and get the process and get out of your own head. That is not necessarily the case as far as like the woods, because I could put in all the time in the world in one spot or whatever, and we only have, you know, so much finite time where I can do that when kids are at school or my wife's gone, or, you know, you can find a way to shoot 5 arrows every day, but you can't find time to scout 10 new properties a week. And the instant gratification society that we live in, well, that same learning curve that it took me to be able to master that hinge release, and I use that word very loosely, to be able to execute a shot properly, is a lot more expedited than, you know, just getting on a mature deer, because I could be in the wrong spot. There's so many more variables. So how do you prioritize that time from a hunting standpoint?
Like for me, it was like set up, like I scout for the time of year, like what I'm, you know, I'm primarily a bed hunter, you know, rubs. Like when I scout, especially for like October, you know, let's just say it's February, you know, I'm looking for rub lines. You know, I try to bypass a lot of things that I don't, you know, especially like flat terrain. You know, it's like I'm looking for the signs that it's going to lead me to like an October type kill, like mid October, early October. And for me, it's like rub lines. Like I will, oh, it's cool, it's great. You know, I don't get like super excited for scrapes necessarily, you know, outside of, you know, like scrape week, or, you know, maybe, you know, early season here in New Jersey, You know, that second week of September, historically scrapes can be good, you know, but, you know, if I'm looking for, you know, October, it's just, I want to find security cover. I want to find edge cover and start from there, you know, and it's like, there's just so many different variables, you know, to, like I said, type of properties, you know, that one's hunting, you know, and how one's brain works, you know, like there's just different classes of hunters out there. You know, we see it, you know, like there's only so many Andy Mays and Johnny Stewarts out there, you know, like the, you know, I don't consider them, you know, average hunters. Like they have a skill set. They put in work, but they're just naturally better than most people that hunt. You know, and it's like, and not like Joe Miles and Miles Keller, all these people out there, you know, there's just people that are just naturally better. Well, when you look at like a grading scale, those people, you kind of want to just, you want to take that with a grain of salt. Cause they're like, in my opinion, they process things better than most people than you and I say. They look at signs and it's like they can visualize it as it happened and like they can formulate a plan in seconds, where like someone like you and I, like I'll overthink a plan. Like I'll choke myself out, overthink it, you know, and it's like, oh, this would be a great spot. And it's like, I'm off to the races. And then I get there and it's like everything, I've just confused myself. You know, for me, like I need to be a little more like concrete. There's my tree. Like I can shoot from the hip, you know, but it's not my specialty. Those guys out there, I think like a true big buck killer, they scout, they do this stuff, but they can make critical decisions on the fly. And they're just like kill decisions. For me, I'll choke myself out. Like if I need to be like, I'm hunting this tree, northwest wind, you know, 3 sticks high. Like whenever I can follow my plan that I have set up, I'm a lot more successful than, you know, going rogue, so to speak. You know, but for me, like I said, it's property. You know, you got a crappy property, low deer density, it's going to be tougher, you know? So if you're a weekend warrior, gravitate towards, you know, higher deer density areas, you know, could definitely help you out. But just, it's a hard question to answer. Give like a concrete, like, this is what you need to do, you know, because my buddy Tony, you know, I hunt with it around here. Like he's a phenomenal deer hunter. But when it comes to shooting like older mature bucks, you know, he definitely kind of will overthink it. You know, he makes it a lot more difficult than it needs to be, you know, like, he's a great hunter. He would never starve, but he struggles to kill, you know, the big deer where he's hunting. You know, he'll kill nice deer. You know, there's nothing wrong with deer he's killing. You know, but I know some areas hunting and it's like, dude, you're like right there. It's like, but he just overthinks it and just overcomplicates the situation.
So I wasn't looking necessarily for the secret sauce. And I think the Johnny Stewarts and the Andy May for sure is a 10,000 hours guy, right? I mean, he's got notebooks and notebooks and aerial maps to prove that he maybe doesn't just process it differently, but that he's processed it and documented it for so long that it
comes from like an internal thing, like speaking of fishing, you know, there's guys out there, like I grew up, I was a really, like, I wanted to be a professional fisherman. Like I can go to a lake I never been to, I would just catch fish because my gut instinct was like, they're over here. I go over there and catch fish. You know, it was like river fishing. I never fished rivers. I go up to Canada and I was just tearing fish up. And I was like, this is easy. Never seen a river before, but I just look at the river like, the fish are over there. Sure enough to be over there. Like my gut instinct just put me on fish. And like my dad and brother would be sitting right next to me, casting the same spot, same lure, not catching shit. And I just play one after another. One after another. So it's like, there's a lot of variables that some people, it just comes to that. Like their intuition's like right there, like, oh, that big buck's going to do this. And sure enough, it does it. Or for me, I'm like, oh, that big buck's going to do this. And I'll be set up. And it's like, he's coming in like a doe or like a four wheeler, you know, fucking an airplane crash into the woods next to me or something. We'll just like totally just destroy it. And you're like, what the, you know, what the fuck is that about? You know, like my rut hunting November, I'm the worst guy when it comes to November. You know, it was like, it's the easiest time in the woods to kill deer. And it's like the hardest time for me to kill deer. I was like, oh, bucks are chasing. They're just sit in the funnel, sit by doe bedding. You'll kill buck. Wrong. It just doesn't work for me. You know, it's like I could sit in the spot for five straight days, which I have. I've never seen a buck. And then my buddy will go in there the day after and shoot a buck. And it's like, well, I don't understand. Like, I didn't see nothing for like a week. You go in there like, an hour light, dude, you shoot a mega giant. And it's like, cool. You know, it's like, that's just how, you know, it's a little bit of luck involved, I guess. And like I said, some people are just better at it than others. But, even without the 10,000 hours, you know?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, like, in you, who's got freaking 10 years worth of affirmations just on hand, you know, like, you can't say, like, oh, I'm just an average guy, right? So from that, like, average guy perspective, like, if they were saying, okay, like, and I think for a lot of people, this is where, like, almost like the rubber meets the road. You have to, like, make the distinction, whether it's anything in life, really, but shooting, deer hunting, whatever, to say that, you know, what I've been doing isn't working, so I have to make a change. Like, what are, I was kind of talking about, like, what are the first steps for that? You know, when I say, like, I can just go ahead and put it out there to the universe, this is what I'm going to do. But if I don't change anything, and if I keep doing things, so, like, from the Greg Litzinger, Dave Guru, you know, stoicism type standpoint, like, what are the first decisions or the changes that you need to make?
We'll since it's shooting season, we'll talk about shooting. Let's just say you're shooting every day. You're just going. It's like, and your goal is like, I just want to be a better shooter, but you didn't really break down that goal. You're not reaching for anything. So you have to look at that and be like, what am I doing here? Like, what is my, why am I going to the range to shoot? What is the purpose? What is the point? You go in there to fling arrows, or you go in there to train? You know, and then relate that to hunting. Are you walking around the woods aimlessly? Or are you walking with a purpose, a plan? You know, like, so when you want to go to the range and shoot, what are you practicing today? What is the reason you're going to go walk a course or shoot a 3D course? Is it just for fun? Is it for a reason? You know, like, scouting and hunting for me is like, once I looked at it from like a, almost like a, I hate using the word like a job standpoint, but like, why am I here going out into the woods? What am I doing? Am I just walking? You know, like, no, like, you need to have a reason why you're in the woods. I'm finding buck bedding day. I'm finding rubs. And that's what you're focused on. You know, the shooting. What am I doing? It's windy. I'm going to go shoot in the wind. It's super windy today. All right. What is the goal for today? I write it down in a little thing on the way there. You know, have a little notebook, whatever it might be. You know, like, I want to execute good shots in the wind. Where they land is pointless. I want to know on my end, I'm doing what I need to do. I'm okay with the wind pushing me off target. I'm not getting anxious. You know, like, I'm okay with this. Like, it's windy. I'm going to get off, blast it. You know, and then for me, I never used a clicker because I would time it like a hinge release. Like, I don't want to know what's happening here because my brain is very, if I allow it to take control, you know, it will fuck me up. Basically, you know, like, I'm not the best clicker shooter. I've tried. And my coach was like, if you put a clicker on that hinge, I'm going to take it and I'm going to throw it in the woods. Because he's like, you don't need to time your shot. Just a shot will break when it breaks. You're just getting used to this. And you have to be, hold yourself accountable after every shot. How was that? Was it good? What positive note can you take away from that? If not, all right, you know, I need to work on this. I need to do this. But it's a positive reinforcement, you know, and holding yourself accountable. Just like scouting, you know, if you get back to the truck and you don't know what you did, did you really even go in the woods aspect? It's like, why were you in the woods? Write it down while you were in the woods. Keep a journal, you know, like guys that keep journals, you know, like you need to be able to, you know, read what you've done, you know, what, where you walked. Like now with phones and all the apps, it's a lot easier to, you can see what you've done, but same time, you're spending more time doing this than actually looking what you should be doing, you know? I know, for me, I've been trying to keep my phone in my pocket a lot more and just letting the deer, you know, terrain and deer sign guide me through it. I put the tracker on and I just go see something cool and mark it real quick, you know, take a picture, mark it, and kind of, and then when I get back home, I'll look at that picture. I'm like, all right, this is what it was. And I'll like relive that moment. But when I'm scouting, I'm just not scouting, not about my phone and trying to get certain waypoints, you know. I think sometimes the phones can definitely hinder your growth because you can have too many pins on a map. You're overpinned. Like for me, it's like overstimulation. I got some spots around here. I break the map open and it's like there's just pins everywhere, scrapes all over the place, and it just confuses me because it's like I don't even want to. So I've been deleting a lot of them, you know, I'm like, I don't even want that shit on there anymore. Cause it's like, I look at it and it's like, this is from like 6 years ago. What do I need this pin in here for? I ain't gonna do anything with it. Like delete it or this track, get rid of it. You know, it's dead weight. Get rid of it. You know, I want just fresh, recent data.
It's interesting that you frame it that way from like going into the woods, because I'd never viewed it like that ever. And just hearing you say that, it makes me think that like some of the guys that are the most successful hunters that I know, and I'm not talking about like guys that anybody knows, right? We're removing them,
yeah.
But these guys who they say like, well, I only have so much time that I'm taking away time for my family and blah, 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 blah. And they say, so I want to be intentional with my time and I only want to hunt these days that are good and all that stuff. And like, I've embraced that a little bit from a like hunting type standpoint, from like the days to be in the woods, like not just be in the woods because I have an opportunity. And if I do have an opportunity and I'm not taking away from anything, then I don't just go sit somewhere. I'll go do the like scout hunt type thing. But never did I ever look at that from like a scouting like perspective, because I guess I always just look at it as like, I know that these spots are here, so I want to go check and see if there's any deer activity right there, or I want to go check out this new area, but I don't, there's never any like intention. Like I'm not like, oh, I think I, and it's also like, you know, I can say that I think that there's going to be buck bedding there. So I guess, how do you do that on a, like a new property, or like even on a property that you know, like how can you be intentional in that? Because I think on some level, and this is probably like maybe more people than I would think, but I feel like I just identify like, oh, I'm just a hunter. Like this is what I do. So I like, I should be scouting. And I think there's other people who are like, well, all these other guys like Greg, they're always out scouting. These guys are always out scouting. So I need to be out scouting, not knowing even what I'm looking for. Right.
It's scout with a purpose, you know, like with shooting, shoot with a purpose. Like just don't go to range and shoot arrows. Go there to improve. You go there for a reason. Same with scouting, you know, like when I wanted to shoot bigger deer, like I think I went 3 years without shooting a buck. But those 3 years, it was like, I got to get away from, I know how to kill like a 2-year-old, year and a half. Like I want to kill something older. So it was like, I know what this buck sign looks like, you know? So it was like, I need to find something different. Like I need to change my approach because what I'm doing is not getting me to where I want to go. So it was like immersing with the books, reading, you know, pre-internet era, pre-YouTube era, basically, you know? So it was like, I went out. And I, whoever was a good hunter, I'd ask questions. What are they looking for? You know, and old trapper was like tracks, big deer, big tracks, big deer. Sometimes they have headgear, sometimes they don't, but it's a big deer, you know, focus on that. So it's like tracks, you know, I was like, all right, big tracks. So it was like, that was going like, I want to find areas, cart roads, you know, cut a big track, look at it. Where is it going? It's going this way. Like before, you know, phones and any type of mapping software, it's like, you know, we got like fire roads in here. You see, you cut a big track and you look at it. It's like, there's a track going east. It's going both ways. Well, all right. You know, I know where this road is. I'm going to just follow this trail, see where it leads me. You know, so it's like, I'm focusing on that track. You know, and now, you know, and then like that led to big rubs and stuff like that. I was never a big like food guy, personally, you know, but scouting, looking for certain types of buck sign. You know, it's like historically, you know, big buck sign like thick, nasty stuff. So walk that edge. You know, I don't want to get into the thick, nasty. I want to walk that edge, see where they're coming and going. You know, so it's like, you know, and then they hunt in the marsh. I know they're betting in those islands. Which islands are betting on? Well, I'm going to walk the edge, you know, and see where I find buck sign. Look at it. You know, back in the day, it was like old Google Earth maps. It's like, I've walked this edge 100 times. Like, I think these are the trees, you know, that I found that buck sign. Then you look at it, you're like, okay, well, I can see. And then, you know, you can see faint trails in the marsh and you're like, oh, okay. And now I know what they're doing. Like, there's rubs going into the mainland, so they must be better on those islands, you know. So it's like, now, like I said, with the phones, you can be taking a dump at work and scouting, you know. It's like you have all that ability, you know, but 20 years ago we didn't have that ability. You know, it was like, you have to, I need to be able to get back here. So it's the eye shine and flag and tape and all that other crap, and, you know, and like the old green screen GPS, how awful are those things? The yellow E-Trex, just an arrow pointing in a certain direction. You're like, no trails, no tracks. But I know. Yeah, like, you know, like, scout with intent. Just don't go out there with a reason. Like, hey, I want to scout. I need to get better at finding food. Get a few books, watch some videos on food, what are deer eating in your area. Talk to a few biologists, make some calls. You know, don't just trust YouTube. You know, call a local biologist, fishing game. You can get a lot of information from those guys. Like I spent a lot of time talking to biologists, you know, around here, you know, even lately, those guys, they're biologists. They're a lot smarter than me when it comes to what deer like to eat in South Jersey, you know, same like PA. You talk to like people that hunt the Poconos, you know, the deer eat different than the Alleghenies, you know, and stuff like that, you know, so you need to know what you're looking for. And in your brain, say, I'm out here like for a reason. You got to keep keep telling yourself that. You know, I'm here to scout for big buck sign. Don't get sidetracked with like, oh, look, shiny objects, and you're like, you're over here. Like, that's why I'm a horrible turkey hunter, because I can't just focus on turkey. It turns into I'm looking for deer sign. So it's like I literally bought a tag so I can go scouting for deer. Basically, you know, it's like I just never really got into turkey hunting like that, because, oh, there's some birds in the field, a couple, you know, clucks and yelps, and it's like nothing happens. It's like I make a move and I see a rubber scrape, and then I'm like, I'm off to the races. It's like I carry this stupid gun or my bow around till noon. I just want to be looking for deer sign, you know.
Now, how does that fit with your affirmations or intentions? Like, I'm leaving the house today to hunt turkeys.
Like I said, that's why I'm not a very good turkey hunter. I admit it. Like, it was, like, I killed some turkeys, and it's like, but then I've really gone out. I tried turkey hunting for like 3 years, like full on turkey hunting, because New Jersey, you got to apply for permits, and there's only so many Saturday permits, and I'm not taking work. I'm not missing work to chase turkeys. It's not my speed, you know. So it's like, I'll get a Saturday, but dude, everybody's hunting Saturday. So you go somewhere, there's just trucks everywhere, and it's like, eh, fuck this. You know, like all public land hunting in Jersey, like we got the best zones that I apply for. Well, everybody hunts those zones because there's really nothing up north worth hunting. So like everybody comes down the zone, I think about zone 20. Everybody's hunting zone 20. People out of state hunting zone 20. And I'm like, eh, you know, Turkey hunting's not for me. I'd rather be scouting for deer.
Yeah, I don't see any turkeys behind you on the wall, so.
There's only one there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. There you go.
First turkey, shot him with the bow. First turkey with the bow with an 11-inch beard, 24 pounds. Yeah. And like I shot that with a bow and was like, unless you're shooting turkeys in the head with a bow, you're just ruining all the meat. Like that turkey, I got like a half a breast, destroyed one leg. And I'm like, skinning it and stuff like that. I'm like, well, what? I could just shot it with a gun. Got the whole bird, you know, got a whole mount, you know, like that turkey was destroyed. Like, you can barely enough to save the fan, you know. I'm like, and I was like, wow, all this for like half a breast. And I was like, yeah, I'll just shoot him with a gun next time or shoot him in the head with a bow, you know?
So on a heavier topic, I'm imagining that you're looking at crossbows now. So what one is, do you come up with?
I've had so many people offer their cross guns and I'm like, I can borrow my buddy's, I'm going to actually do like a YouTube video on that. I'm going to borrow his Raven and just set up like a target, like 60 yards and just group them, you know, like this. And it's like, is that really fair? You know, it's like, it's not fair at all. They got scope, you know, you're gaining an extra 10 minutes of light with a good quality scope versus, you know, people that are shooting with a bow or like recurve or something.
Well, what was that like? Duck Dynasty one or whatever, that was like a night vision scope.
Yeah, like where does it end? You know, especially here in Jersey, they want to implement seven buck harvest for the year. You buy all your tags, and it's like seven. Like they're worried about numbers, and like you can shoot 7 bucks, but I can only shoot 5 does. What? Like, let me just shoot like unlimited dose. If that's the case, you want to get the numbers down, get rid of those. Don't get rid of bucks. I mean, it just seems kind of the state. I don't think they're doing a very good job of seeing the bigger picture. I think politics has definitely infiltrated wildlife management in New Jersey.
Well, yeah, that's got like some messed up thing with bears too.
Yeah, they stopped bear hunting and then they allowed it and they stopped it. But even like with fishing, I mean, I think they're very strict with their fishing, like flounders. Like, I think when I was living in Atlantic City, like flounders might have been like 12 inches. You can keep a flounder 12 and it decimated it. So it went up to like 14. And I think it went up to like 16 inches. Like to keep a flounder, you got to catch like a giant doormat. And then you're like, you're very strict with the fishing, but hunting, you're like, fuck, kill them all. You know, stripers, you know, they got the slots and stuff you can keep, like, and it paid off, you know, like I think they take their fishing management a little bit more serious than their deer, in my opinion. You know, I'm not a biologist, I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm not an idiot by any means, you know, like they want to do 7 bucks with no antler point restrictions. So shotgun people can kill 3 bucks now, the week of shotgun. And all that stuff. And it's like, so I can kill 2 with the bow, 3 with shotgun, you know, 1 with the muzzleloader, and then like 1 with winter bow. And it's like, what are we doing here? Like, what is, you just want to eradicate the deer herd completely? You know, especially like public land. Like, I hunt the Pine Barrens here in Jersey. A lot of clubs drive that. And they don't, you know, so if a club, they all about numbers. They'll shoot every spike they see, you know, just for like a numbers game. Like we got 30 in our club and it's like, all right. Like if all you do is gun hunt, you want to shoot a deer. Okay. You want some meat? I got nothing against that, you know, like cool. But if you're just stacking deer up, so your club killed more deer. I don't know. It just kind of rubs me the wrong way. You know, it's like, cause it'd be like same thing with fishing, you know, like, if you catch every fish you caught, like every fisherman or guys was like, you know, you go up there and be like stringer of fish every time you go up there. Like after a while, like you'll see less and less fish. It's just a numbers game. You know, like there used to be a lake by us here, phenomenal fishing. You catch 4 to 5 pound bass in topwater all the time. And word got out. Next thing you know, it was like, it was a bunch of people from Pennsylvania, a lot of Asians, you know, a lot of some Maryland tags, PA tags, and they were keeping every 5 pound bass they caught. Well, it didn't take long for the lake just to be, it's just awful now. There's just nothing in there. And it's like, it was cool, like a public fishing access. You can catch a 5 pound bass, like almost any night of the week. You go out there for a half hour, you're catching a good bass, or maybe two or three. Now you fucking throw buzz baits for hours on end and get no bites. And it was like, you ruined it. You know, it's like, people just ruined it. Like now it's just like nothing there because of greed and whatever. I don't know.
So for the longest time, you were just all hunting and shooting.
Yeah.
And now you can't shoot. You don't know if you're going to be able to hunt. You don't want to even shoot a mouth bow, a tab. So is that what we're going to see, is like the buzz bait fiend? Like the new, give me back to fishing.
Fall fishing is nice, man. Like I said, I used to striper fish before they allowed hunting on Sunday. Whole month of November, I just striper fished every Sunday. You know, to go down there into, you know, out of Cape May and whatever, and just rivers and just striper fish. It's, you know, catching big fish is cool. You know, it'd be, I'm hoping this, you know, ends well for me. You know, I don't want this to not turn out right, where it just complicates my life, you know, outside of hunting space.
Right.
I'm trying to be like a responsible adult at 46, you know.
Well, you had to grow up sometime. Maybe it's just the world's way of telling you.
So overrated. I'd rather be carefree, you know.
Well, you're definitely going to be missed up at the Total Archery Challenge in Michigan. Are you still going to work the booth in PA for Latitude so people can stop by and see you up there?
Yep, me and my brace holding it down.
Awesome.
That's not, like I said, the PA one's not. I think it's like 4 hours for me. I can make it like 4.5 hours. It's not too bad. You know, so.
You're going to be there the whole time? I mean, it's not like you're working.
Yeah, I got nothing else. It'd probably be good to get away from my wife for a while. You know, I'm annoying the shit out of her. I just sit around and do nothing all day. Do something. I can't hunt my hand.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, what else you got going on, Greg? Anything exciting? I mean, what is your, like, in a perfect world, like, what's your outlook? I see you're still doing, like, some scouting videos, and you've been out and stuff like that. Has this allowed you to get out more, or are you getting out as much?
Actually, last Sunday was the first time I've been out since the middle of February. And, like, it felt good. But it's pine barrens, it's flat. So it's like, you know, I would like to go to the mountains. I would like to really, like, I had time, but it's like, yeah, probably not the best idea. You know, I go rocking the mountains with a busted hand. So like I went out Sunday, like it was nice, but it was hot. And just from having my hand down here with this brace, like I said, it's just, you know, it's a hard plastic. Like I was just sweating so bad. I mean, it was like I could smell my hand. It was just smelling awful. And I'm like, oh, this is great. You know, like this thing just smells like cheese. Like I've washed it like 3 times today. I can just like smell it right now. It's just marinating because I got a little bit, like a little, you know, what do we give you? Pretty much, they mold it to your hand. There's my hand. See the scar there. But the form is non-existent. But yeah, like, it just smells so bad.
So for you, like, that's one of the things I was going to ask you, and I kind of forgot about it, was, so for those guys who, you know, you said when you're out in February or when you're out, you know, right after the season, you're looking for rub lines, you're doing that. What are you looking for now? Like, if you're being intentional about your scouting, what is your intentions at this time of year?
Or the rub lines still be there, but it's really hard to gauge like the age of the rub line, you know, especially with the green up. Like, so for me, it's scrapes like this time of year, like I'll run across a scrape or two. That's kind of where I do most this time of year. Historically, scrapes, like if I'm finding scrapes, I'm going out in the woods, like, why is this scrape here? Like, look, find the sign, you know, and like, if it's a high traffic doe area, usually there's going to be tracks in it still, you know, at least around here in Jersey, some of my places that I scout this time of year, there's still tracks in it. Like, all right, it's a high doe concentration area. The deer are still here, you know, or it's a big track in there. All right, the buck's probably living here, you know, a good portion of the year. So it's like, why is this scrape here? Look around, you know, now with the maps, you pull up on your phone, like, do I know whether it's bedding? You know, it's like, okay, there's historically these does like to bed in this laurel patch. You know, it's like, bump through that laurel patch, usually you can kick the deer up. You know, it's like, okay, those does are still bedding there. You know, and then, you know, just kind of confirm where you think there might be some bedding. You know, Sunday when I was out, you know, we just almost stepped on a deer. Like, they did not want to leave this little laurel patch. And then once one went, like 30 deer just running all over the place. Like, they didn't know where they were. Like, they were just like running here, running there, jumped across the road. You know, they were all over the place, but those deer did not want to leave that little laurel patch for some reason. So it's like, all right, you know, like, there's something to this. You know, like, they felt really comfortable letting me walk by. Like, they weren't even going to bust. So for me, I see something like that. It's like, all right, they don't want to give away their location. You know, like, that deer that I almost stepped on was probably a buck. You know, like, he didn't want to give away his secret spot. So it's like, I marked that. It's like, all right, now there's something to it. You know, like, so maybe in a couple of weeks, hands feeling good, you know, I'll go back out and see if I can find why those deer were in that pocket, you know, because it could be, you know, fantastic buck bed, you know, in there. Like, it could be like, you know, they're monitoring this cart row where people walk in and out on hunters, you know, come hunt season. It's like, all right, you know, like, maybe they're monitoring the hunters walking in, you know, stuff like that, you know, stuff where I'm not too beds this time of year. And it's, you're going to find them, you know, unless you're like a point in the marsh or something or in the mountains where it's like, there's a reason for that bed to be here. You look on a map, be like, oh, it's a point going out to the marsh. Well, historically, there's beds there, you know, especially if it's a good point, you go there, there's beds, you know, all right. But now you got the long hair, shedding beds, all the other stuff. So it's kind of hard. And the big food shift. So usually it's like just tracks, you know, scrapes, you know, maybe see some rubs, like look at the direction of travel. Like, hey, there's tine marks, you know, chest high on this one. I found three more, you know, heading the same direction and head in this direction. All right. Like, let me look at that over there because he's probably not bedding over there. You know, this time of year. So I'm not afraid of bumping deer out this time of year. It just sucks with the bugs. Like, Sunday was just Tickville, USA, man. Like, I had enough permethrin on my clothes, my gaiters, my boots, you know, to cause cancer probably. And it was like those ticks were just coming right up to, like, they're like that movie 28 Days Later, like the fast zombies. Like, I run like super fast. I feel like ticks are extremely fast now than they used to be as a kid growing up. It's like, you look at him like, boy, he's on my boot. Next thing you know, it's like, he's at your knee, like in like seconds. And you're like, dude, like, that's, you're covering some real estate, like really quick.
Yeah. There's been a lot of them around. I had like every, I went turkey hunting a couple days ago and I had like every kind of bug on me, like known to man. Like, I got back in the truck and there's worms crawling all over me and I'd flick them off and then there'd be like different kind of worms on me. I'm like, what the hell? But I didn't find any ticks. So, but I think, like they said, it has to be like below 20 degrees for like X amount of days in a row. And I don't think we had that in Michigan. And I don't think we've had that in quite some time. So that's.
Well, even that, like in PA, I go up there, November, you're getting ticks on you in November. And I was like, just die already. Like they were like, there's cold tolerant, even like in Jersey, like we'll get ticks sometimes. And like November is not so bad, but I'll get them in like right around like Halloween. And I'm like, don't you guys like die? Like at some point in time, you're like, okay, this is it. Like I should be dying now. And I've ran into some old timers and some guys, I mean, they made like a valid point. We don't allow, like fires don't spread anymore. As a kid, you know, like they remember like fires, like they would ravage. But now we've built all this area up, you know, like yards and whatnot. And we have manicured lawns and all the other stuff. But the treatment that we're putting on the lawns, they're building resistance to it, you know, like it's not working. So these ticks are just multiplying, you know, and it's like the stuff on dogs, you know, like we put the front line on it. Well, it only works if they bite them. Well, they're out in the yard, they come in the house, you know, there's ticks crawling on the couch. Cause it's like, we put the flea and tick stuff on. Well, who kills them if it bites them? If it's crawling on them, you know, it's like them getting out of Dodge, you know, it's like they'll crawl in like the cats and stuff like that. But there's no fires. The winters are not cold anymore. You know, we're building up, you know, habitat, destroying, especially in Jersey, they're just destroying the habitat. And we don't do no control burns really. So it's like, I mean, the only enemy, possums can't eat that many. I mean, they eat a lot of ticks, but it's like, I used to see possums. Like, I mean, I grew up at my dad's house, possums in the yard all the time. I mean, I live in the middle of the woods. I never see possums at all, ever in my yard. I have one in my trash can. You remember when I first moved in? You know, he got my trash can. I go to put it in there. He's in there. I just pick him up by his tail and like put him in the woods. But I never see possums. You know, I hear raccoons every now and again, but it's like, I know possums are
tick eaters.
Great tick eaters. Never see them. And I got friends that trap and they hardly ever trap possums. I don't know. Like, it's weird. I need more turkeys, more chickens. I just want like 1,000 chickens in my yard. Go up and down my dead end street, you know, like, because my dog, I walk the dogs and they always got to walk in the tall grass and get ticks. They won't walk on the road or like the mowed part. Like, oh no, 3-foot grass. Let me go in there and take a shit. And then you're like, getting covered in ticks. Come on, man. Like, someone just take chickens and guinea hens and let them loose everywhere.
So when you come out of this, you know, we always ask, like, John is always asking, like, you know, what bow you shoot and all that stuff. Like, so now you don't have any bow to shoot. So you, when you get graduate out of this and you can shoot a bow again, are you going to finally get a new one?
No.
No?
No, cheap. As you well enough know.
Yeah, I know.
Like, the only bow that, I mean, I know I shot last year, you know, if I'm shooting the carbon bow, like, the aluminum bows, I'm not a fan of carrying just a heavy bow around, you know, because I usually shoot my quiver on, you know, the one piece quiver. Like I keep everything with my bow now. Very rarely do I take my quiver off. It's like aluminum bows are just heavy, man. You know, the only aluminum bow I might think about shooting is like an APA because they're light. You know, they're sub 4 pounds, and it's like, okay, I'm not carrying a boulder around, you know. It's like, cause a lot of guys say they walk, you know, far, but it's like, I legit have like a mile walk plus on average, you know, to most of my spots. I don't hunt very close to the truck. So it was like carrying that boulder around all day in the morning, you know, like I've tried the slings and all the other crap. It just sucks. You know, I like to just carry my bow in my right hand, you know, but carbon bows, just so fucking expensive. It's like the Elite era I shot last year. I just love that bow, but I'm like $1,700. Fuck that. You know, it's like even the Expeditions, you know, that those light ones I got. Dude, the price, it's like, dude, I'm just fucking cheap.
Yeah, but like, but that APA is the same price.
Yeah.
You know, you tell me about it, like $1,700 because I looked at it and I was like, but that seems like the anti-Greg bow. Because it's like, in my mind, I feel like you're a lot like John in the fact, like, everything needs to be like, have a purpose or be like slim down, like bare necessities, right? And like that bow to me is like a Swiss Army knife. It slices, it dices, it thrices, it's the nicest. Like it's got a carry.
Wait, there's more.
It's got a carry handle. It's got a built-in broadhead sharpener. It's got, I mean,
the carry handle. That's one thing I would like about it. Because for me, like I carry, you know, I know, especially when I took, I went elk hunting the first time, I had an older Newbery, which was light, aluminum bow. But I remember carrying it, like, with the quiver and everything on, like, I'm using my thumb to hold it. You know, like, my forearm was getting tired. You know, so when I bought the last time I went elk hunting, I bought that Carbon Icon. Well, it's light. Dude, 10 times better lugging that motherfucker around than a fucking, like, the newer bows, like, I've shot like the Matthews and all the stuff. It's like, God, they're just so fucking heavy. I don't care how you like it. It's a light 4.5 pounds, they say. Motherfucker, 4.5 is 4.5 pounds. There's no light 4.5. It's a fucking set number. Then you can put a slider sight on, quiver full arrows. And I shoot two back, you know, a side bar and a front bar. I'm like, dude, when I was competing, you know, like I was shooting a 7 pound bow. That shit would fucking drain on you just fucking shooting all day, like a shoulder, like after a while, like they're 50, 60 hours. But imagine lugging that fucking thing in around the mountains. And I'm like, yeah, that man, like that just seems counterproductive. Nice, a heavy bow stable, sure. I won't be able to carry the motherfucker first, you know.
But like all the stuff that's on there, it's like, oh, it's got a tool for this, a tool for this, a tool for this. And like, I think I understand like, it, but it's just like, that doesn't seem like something that would be like, you'd be like, what the fuck do I need this for? You know?
Well, yeah, the sharpener, I don't give a fuck about that. Take the things off. But like the carry handle and the cam tool. Like, because like, I mean, I've done that with, you know, I've done that here. You know, stick an arrow, you know, and a, you know, PSC thing, just loosen up the tie of people real quick, you know? I've done it on the range. Like, here, give me your bow. Boop, boop. You know, it's like, lift up, put an arrow in there, 2 hours and he's sitting and holds it for a second, you know, you slide the peep down and take it out, you know, and it's like, you know, well, you're not sliding the peep down, you know, under tension and fucking your string up. Like that's that the handle in that thing is nice, but like I said, the price, I look at that, it's like fuck, that's a lot of money. You know, it's like and I have I'm not poor. By any means, it's like I have money, but it's like I buy that new bow. Oh, I gotta buy new stabilizers. I gotta buy a new rest and do this. So that $2,000 turns into like $3,200. And I'm like, for $3,200, I'm going on like a hunt trip somewhere. It's like, to me, that's like, or I'll take my family on vacation, you know, something way cooler than a bow, you know. And I could probably have shops help me out, but it feels good to be in a space where it's like, yeah, I have to kind of do what I want, you know? You know, I don't want to be tied down to too many things in the hunting space, you know?
Especially you still like, want it to be more fun.
Yeah, like bows, like I want to be able to shoot whatever I want. Maybe if I, like a shop, I could probably maybe finagle something with a shop. But even that's like, now I need to do certain things for that shop. And it's like, if I need money, I'll just work a few Sundays, you know, like kind of, that's my mindset. And having, I mean, I would love to have a whole stable full of bows again. I mean, I used to have like 5 bows all set up. Now I got 2. And it's like, well, they're good.
Right. And, you know, I've been shooting that Carbon Zion, I think, for the last 4 years. And I'm in the same way. Like it shoots just fine. Like it's got, you know, all the best stuff on it. I mean, I could get something just strictly for vanity,
yeah.
But it's, I mean, I would rather just carry it out. I mean, the thing is just like beat to shit and it's all rusty and all sorts of stuff, but it still shoots good.
Marsh. Like, well, I have the marsh lot, salt marsh. I'm setting the bow down. Like, it beats your bow up reeds and the brackish water. You're always falling down and getting, it's just having like, oh, I got a $2,000 bow plus all accessories. I would never take it to marsh. So I'm like, nope. So it's like, or it's like the carbon icon there's basic bow. There's no fancy anything. It's like, it's a well-built solid bow, and it's like, and I can shoot it pretty good. It likes it, 70 pounds don't feel like 70 pounds. It's like, the arrows got on them now, they're like 525 grains. I never did shoot a deer with it last year. I did shoot, I didn't find them, but it's like, it shoots it good, and it's good enough speed. It's a 264-2 or something. Plenty fast enough for me, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right, man.
But like bow sponsorships is tough. I know, like I said, the new breed, I was messing with them. It was like, they were nice to deal with, They sent me the bows and they sent me cool shit to use. But now it's like, Athens is gone now. It's like, there's not many smaller boat companies out there. Or it's like, if I give my money to someone, it's like, Matthews don't need my money. Nice bows, Maybe if I was competing, I'd buy a higher end bow because it does help. But for hunting, let's be real. How many deer am I shooting at 70 yards? None. Like, I'm 20 yards. Like, my average shot is sub 20 on whitetails, So it's like, I shot one at 42. I think one at 35 or 38. Most are 20 and under. Do I really need a $2,000 bow and a $500 sight and, a $200 rest and all that shit to shoot 20 yards? Probably not.
Well, you said like, if I was competing, a more expensive bow would help. And we just finished up, or we just built them bows yesterday. And, it's funny to see John's reaction, like shooting them side by side. Cause he likes the bear grip better. Yep. And then he's like, it holds really good. He likes a draw cycle on the Matthews, but he's shooting a V3X. So, it makes sense. But like he was saying, and like, we got to do a video on it, like him actually shooting him. Cause he was just shooting them like through paper.
Yeah.
But he's like, because of the way that the Matthews limbs, because the rides are so long and the limbs are so short and they peel in, he's like, because the bear bow stays bigger.
Yeah.
He's like, there's less wobble in it. Like it's like shooting a longer bow. It's like shooting more like a target bow. It's a lot more stable. And he's like, I need to figure out something with that Matthews grip. Cause he's using like the UV grip on his other bow. And he's like, out of the box, he's like, I hate the Matthews grip. Like, so
that's not a direct riser. There's a plastic or something grip on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know Tim Gillingham has grips that he's making, I think, for the Matthews bows now.
Yeah. But it's funny because you're like, and that's the whole reason we're doing this. And you are the biggest like detractor. You're like, we know how this one's going to end. Like he's going to pick the Matthews. It's going to be, but if he can shoot the same with him, that's the only thing I care about. Like he may prefer it just because that's what he's been shooting. But
like, I think where you see the Matthews probably separate is going to be on the, the longer distance shots. I think, from like a hunting standpoint, 30 yards and under, you're probably not going to see much of a difference, because like a good arrow, like you really won't tell like a good arrow until you start really like the further you go, like arrow selection is critical. Like a high performance arrow, an expensive arrow is just a better built arrow. At 20 yards, probably not going to see much of a difference, 40, 50, 60, 70, it's like, now you're going to start to see like the groupings narrow down. So I think you'll just try an attack on the, see where the separation starts, like keep a score when he's shooting the one, and then if you can shoot them maybe the same course with both bows, see what it's like, and see, because I I'm going to limit and say that the Matthews at the distance is probably going to perform better on average, you know, not 100%, you know, because he could be on with the Bear that day, you know, mentally and everything, physically, like, so the Bear could put on. But I think from like a point standpoint, you know, putting it in the center of the X, you're probably going to, especially in an attack situation, the further shots, you'll probably see a difference. Yeah, but if we're hunting, you know, 30 and under, it's probably negligible at best, you know.
But it's funny that you, of all people, would say that simply because the words that just came out of your mouth were like 6.5 pounds of 6.5 pounds of 6.5 pounds. And if you're shooting the same arrow in an arrow on a bow that's shooting bullet holes, you know, that's properly tuned, like, man, that's hard to, you know what I mean? Obviously, you don't have like a, I don't even know how you would be able to precisely make how much the bullet hole is.
Yeah.
You know, like how perfectly round it is, but you know what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah. Because I know, like a competing standpoint, when I got into shooting, I was shooting a hunting bow with just a 3D arrow, same rest, drop away rests, you know, and I bought a used Prime Centroid, did pretty well. You know, I was always in like the top four, top five. You know, every now and then I get like third place. And then when I bought like a shoot through riser, PSC 3D Dominator, it was literally like the next year, I was like podium, 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 first, second, third, wherever I went to. It's just those bows just get you points. You know, it's just the taunt, the machining is better. Tolerance is better. It's designed, you know, for a specific application. You know, it was like, because I always said that, you know, I was like, ah, this is, and I would beat people with the high end bows from a hunting bow. But when I got a high performance bow, it was like, you've seen, it was like, I mean, it's like a night and day difference. And the following, I shot that bow for 2 years. And then I was like, I can win with any bow. And I bought a Bear, longer axle, 35 inch bow with the hybrid cams. The best I could do with that bow was like fucking 291. You know, I was shooting over 300 with the PSC. It's just, you know, it just handles torque better. You know, this is, it's designed for a specific application where like a general hunting bow, tolerances aren't there. You're going to see, you know, there is some separation. Because, you know, even with, like I said, arrows, you know, you got those Olympic people and the people that shoot FIDA and all that stuff, you know, and the World Cup. Those arrows are fucking expensive, man. Like, legit expensive. But they're like a perfectly built arrow. Well, if I could take a shitty arrow and compete at that level, it's like, why would I do that? But you can't. It's just, it's a night and day difference.
I'll tell you what, like, and, you know, there's so much that goes into that as far as like variables and all that stuff. And we were shooting out at the club the other day, and one of the guys that shoots on our league was out there shooting. He just got new arrows, and he bought, because he's going to tack, it's his first time, and he's like, I'm gonna, you know, junk a whole bunch of arrows, da, 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 da. You know how everybody thinks. And he bought, and I don't know if you've seen him, but there's like some arrows on Amazon now where you can buy 24 like 300 spine 001s for $75. And so I'm not sure if one of our guys in the Patreon group has them. I know that he had mentioned them, but this guy bought them, and he was out there shooting them. And I mean, we were shooting at, I mean, he was laying them in the dot at 80.
Yeah.
And we were shooting 111. And I mean, that's a tough distance to have a pin for anyways.
Yeah.
But the arrows were flying very well. It was like pretty wild to see, like, not necessarily that I'd like trust them. And I was shooting the Canadis that are like, you know, a thicker walled arrow, almost like the Day Six. So these ones felt like really, they felt like a little bit like those DCA hunters. They felt, yeah, just like a, it was, apples and oranges, other than that they were both arrows.
Yeah, I know when the first tack I went to, I bought Deer Crossing hunters just because I was like, man, I've never really shot a 100 yard 3D target. But I was competing literally, it was like 40 yards and under. I never shot past 40. So it's always like, so I pretty much built a bow. I bought a PSC. I forget what it was, but I regret, it's one of those bows I regret selling. It's just, I just shot that bow extremely well. You know, I bought the full pink strings, bows all blacked out, sword sight, slider. And I was shooting, I was at the top of my game, but I took those arrows there and it was like a rainstorm. It was awful. I was pinwheeling at 85 yards in the woods. Like it was nuts. Just like, I was shooting with two dudes I worked with, the Cabela's. They weren't on my level of shooting. So I didn't necessarily view them as a threat, and they weren't really asking for advice, whatever. They never really shot outside their yard. So they're just slinging arrows all over the place. And I was just on fire. I mean, it's like 90 yards, 80 yards, like 90 yards and under, like I was money. Like I couldn't miss. It was like, man, this is great. So the following year, I bought a DC or a Black Eagle Spartans. Same thing. I shot extremely well, you know, and then like buy more DCA, like, but I, by the third or fourth tack, I wasn't shooting, you know, as much as I was, you know, and it's like, now you see like when I'm on, but it's like, I don't put that, you know, and for me, 90 yards and over, like the DCA is like, they're tough for me to get to tune. You know, it's like, they seem to be like, for me, like that, I'm at that wall, like 80 yards is probably where it starts to fall apart for me. And I don't know if it's just me or the arrows or combination of what, but for me, I've never been able to group 100 yards well with the DCA. The Black Eagles, the Spartans, those things were great. It's just a better arrow. Nothing against the other Deer Crossing arrows, you know. I still hit the target. You know, I'm not missing, you know, completely, but from a point standpoint, grouping standpoint, the Black Eagles, in my opinion, the Spartans just flew better, tighter groups.
Are there 3D like competitions out there? Like, I you know, I've never been to like the R100 or like Redding or anything like that, but like, does scoring at over 80 yards matter to anybody in the world?
If you're competing if you do shoot field archery, yeah. You know, like they do field around here, like dot shooters. And those dudes are just a different breed of person. You know, like I can shoot dots. It's just hard for me because it's like, if you miss it by 6 inches or whatever happens, like your arrow is still in the target. Like for me, it's like, I do better when it's like, man, if I don't hit this target, I'm going to lose this $30 arrow. So for me, like it ups my, you know, like I need to like keep mentally good. Like for me, I struggle shooting paper because of the risk reward. Like, so if I'm low, I'm low. I'm still hitting the giant target at 80 yards. You know, but a 3D target, it's like, oh, it's on some rocks. You know, it's like, I step my game up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, guys that shoot fields that shoot, you know, I mean, my buddy Rick in New York, he's been shooting field 80, 90 yards. And he loves it, but he has a stabilizer scope and everything like that. But he likes shooting those distances, you know, grouping, because that's where you see skill set, be able to shoot groups at 80s, you know, like shoot paper. You do around a field with someone that's really good. You cry on the way home because you realize like, I'm not that good because I can't group at 80. Like, these guys, you shoot, you know, what, 2 hours or whatever, or sometimes three at these distances. These guys are stacking them. And then you're like, I'm lucky to just get one, like, in, like, the five ring. You know, it's, like, this big. And I'm like, I'm just touching the corner. I'm like, woo! And that dude is, like, right in the X. And you're like, fuck, man, like, I can't compete with that, you know? That's a whole different mental, be able to shoot paper at distance than 3D, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I can see that with the 3D because, you know, we've shot together, but you know, like, it's like, for me, it's all about like exactly what you were talking about when you're like, oh, drive by or like lock under, like whatever. It's like, it's all about the hold. Like if I can pick a spot, then I'm okay. But if I don't have anything to aim at and I'm just aiming at a body, then it's like, this may be bad. It's probably going to be very bad, you know?
Yeah. And I know like last year I took the light pounder's bow. Like I'm hoping like this goes well, you know, come up next year. If I can, you know, I'm hoping I should be shooting. Like I'll probably bring a better bow, you know, or maybe even the carbon one, but just build, you know, give me a 290 feet per second bow with a heavier arrow, you know, less wind drag, and try and shoot, you know, better rounds, you know, because 54 pounds and 300 grain arrows, it don't take much wind to blow them fucking things off. Let me tell you, it's like a mouse fart, and that arrow's like, and I'm going over here, you know?
Yeah, I forgot about that you're like, your speed last year was like you're I don't remember like what you had for like the bottom of your tape, but you're like, I can only shoot like this far.
Yeah. Like that. Cause I changed my anchor point a little bit on that bow and to be more consistent at like 80 and under. And it's like, but it topped out at like 90 was a struggle moving that thing. And I was like, and you guys were like shooting 100. I'm like at 100. I was like, I'm aiming like six, aiming at nothing, like 6 inches above his back. And it's like, what's the point in that? Cause it's like, you know, I'm just going to just, if I hit that target, it's by pure luck, you know? And it's like, but I think, you know, I definitely want to get into like when I first couple tacks I went to, like take that shooting distance serious, you know? And for me, it's like 295. If I can get 295 feet per second with like a 400 grain, 410 arrow, somewhere around there, 420. I think shooting at 100 yards would be a lot more fun than what I'm currently shooting, you know, because I actually have a pin for, you know, 105 yards. So it's like, okay, at least let me get on the body of the deer instead of like I'm using like my sight bubble on his back, you know, and so it's like, it's not very accurate. You know, if I'm hitting a target 100 yards with that, there's more luck than skill involved, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I mean, I think we're all rooting for you. I know that I know those guys really appreciated that you weren't just an asshole, you know, and you're like, look at me, shoot.
don't let them look, you know, tricky. Well, I seen Chris, they won that, he sent me a picture he won. I'm like, that's what I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And him and, so Jake, he had like, I want to say like a, and it kind of goes against like what you're saying, but he had like a 6-inch group or something like that at like 81. And then he had like maybe a 10-inch group at 111. And it was like, that, I mean,
10-inch group at 100 yards, phenomenal shooting.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like, but this way, look at the World Cup. Look at these archers that shoot the World Cup. You know, these are the best of the best. Some of their groups at 70 meters is like this. So it's like, these are literally the best archers in the world, you know, like, cause they get dealing with the wind and a lot of variables and like, but it's like, they're shooting, like they're all over that, you know, thing. And it's like, these dudes literally have the best equipment. So you hear these guys like, I'm shooting 1-inch groups at 80. Well, if you were, you would be getting paid professionally to shoot a bow. So shut the fuck up, because 1-inch groups, 2-inch groups at 80, best archers in the world struggle to do that. I mean, these guys are like, they shoot fucking 100, 200 hours a day, 300 hours every day. If you can do that, go get paid to do it. Because trust me, if I can shoot 2-inch groups at 80, I sure as hell wouldn't be working for UPS.
The one thing I wish I had, like, and I don't even think I have one like laying around, and I don't want to like spend the money, but I wish I had like a 0.1 pin, because I have the 19s, and man, at 100, that thing's huge. And with the halo, you know, I mean, it depends
on the sight manufacturers too. I know Viper, they have a 15 pin, but it's small and it's fucking bright. I remember when I was competing, a guy had a Viper sight and they just came out with a 15 pin. And it was like, dude, that is like, he had like the light on it. And I'm like, dude, that is like the perfect fucking size for big enough a distance where you can see it, you know, where it's like 19s, especially from a, you know, it's a good hunting pin, but you're trying to like really dial it in. Like 19 can be a bit much at distance, especially like on a bright day with the certain fibers, way the light's going, you know, it's like, that could turn, you know, your 19 pin looks like a 30 pin, you know, and then same token, like a 10 pin, you know, you need a light on it, you know, like blues. I love shooting blue pins, but man, you just burn through batteries. You got to keep, it's so intense, you know, it's like every round, like every 2 days, you're putting new batteries in your sight. I'm like, that's just, you know, specifically light for that. I'm like, that's just like, it's not feasible for the hunting space, you know? You know, like the see that the UV ultra view, the new scope that came out, the lighted scope and all that stuff. And the guys that is burning four batteries like every week shooting it. I'm like, that's just like, seems like a lot to me, man. Like that's a whole lot of batteries.
I'll tell you what, that freaking, I mean, that ETAC sight, yeah. I got, or the light I have, like those are super expensive. But that thing is freaking badass. Like, I've had it for, I think, 2 years now, and I've never charged it, like, yeah. ever. Like,
I got one right before I stopped, like, right before my daughter was born, I bought Spy Hog on my 3D bow, and I bought tens. I have red, like, because my eyes, like, red, I see very well, even in light or, you know, and dark targets, like, it. And I bought like a nice sight light and all that stuff. And then I bought like, I had a red bunch of red pins and blue pins. And the red pins were nice, but that the sight was like rechargeable. But I was like, if you left it on, it was like halfway through the, you know, if you had turned off every target, like it would fucking die out. And so I got these pins, I can't fucking see. You pull up, you're like, rechargeable light. I'm like, this is fucking dumb. Because it's like, I didn't have like a USB port, like to charge in. And I'm like, just give me like some batteries. But then it's like, then I look at when I had the batteries, and it's like, you're trying to like put these little batteries in, like drop them on the ground. And I'm like, there's just, you got to be ready. Like in that space, if I ever get back in that space, like I'll be a lot more prepared, you know, to shoot that type of stuff.
Dude, that ETAC is like, it's like a computer. Like it shuts off if it doesn't move. And you can set that to 10 seconds, 5 seconds, whatever. And then you just pick it up and it turns back on. Like for hunting, that's, it's freaking awesome. Like it, I mean,
switch or something in there.
Oh dude, it's got like a gyroscope in it. Cause it's like, if you just bump it, it freaking turns on. Like it's all
like that does help. You know, I know like last year, like I like my black old sight. But the up pin, it's not the best for distance. It definitely, it blocks a lot of far shots, especially like with my eyes, you know, and shoot with the glasses. Like it's a wide pin and it's bright. Like the yellow is, it's a great hunting sight, but as far as target shooting, it's not, at least for me, it's not the best pin size. But I do get the halo, you know, especially like tack. Like sometimes like you're out in the sun shooting into the woods and it's like some of them targets, like I'm pulling like on a white target, I ain't seeing shit. You know, I'm seeing just giant green and it's like, well, I think I'm on the target. I think I'm on phone, but I can't pinpoint anything. It's like, there's a target or a black target in the woods, like in the shadows. It's like, I think I'm on phone. I don't know. Like binos, I can't see. So I'm like, well, here goes nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what, that red line torch sight though, yeah, is pretty, did you look at those have you seen them?
No.
They, yeah. So it's a rechargeable housing, and like their new one doesn't have that because it can't be used in some things, but the ones that they have are rechargeable, but they've got the tube, it's like the vertical two pin, and so the top's a 19 and then the bottom is a 10, which is pretty slick. That one, that's what I've been shooting with in the basement, and that's pretty awesome. That's what we've got on both those other bows. So
I know, like I said, I looked at the the Viper sights there at the Harrisburg show. He was there. And I've always wanted one. It's like one of those sights. It's like, as much like the spot hall is adorable, but like from like, I always look at it, it's like, I always say I'm going to get back into like shooting, you know, and it's like, I don't know if I ever will get back to like I was, but it's like, if I ever buy a new sight for 3D, I'm going to buy me a Viper, you know, a three pin with 15s, you know, and it's like, that seems like I've always wanted one. And the newer ones are even like a lot better than the old ones. And it's like, this is 15 pins and it's like a metal housing. It's like, so the fiber optic comes out, it's just straight fiber optics. You know, it's not like going out and you're melting, you know, the giant blob. So you, I got this 19 pin, by the time you melt it, you know, it's a 29 pin, you know? So it's like always one of one. I seen that the Harrisburg show, I was like, man, that sight is nice. But it's like, I'll probably never buy one. It costs money and cheap.
Oh man. One of these days you'll break out of that.
You'll decide. When my kids come on. We're probably like another 15 years away from that. Like freedom.
I don't know. I don't think I'll ever like be that way. Like I'm just too pragmatic. I think if you were competing again and you were like, I think this is going to allow me better scores or something like that, then maybe. But like, I see no return on investment there for me.
It's hard, you know, it's like, even like with the dial sites, like they give you like, I see these prices and stuff. And I'm like, man, it's hard. I mean, look at that. And it's like, that's the value. And it's great. Great machine. There's a lot of like engineering, R&D and stuff, but it's like, dude, that's just like a lot of money. It's a lot of coin. And I'm not poor by any means. Like we're not struggling to eat over here. And it's like, yeah, it's $500. So like, I just can't, you know, that's just a lot. It's a lot of money, you know, and guys that do, I mean, great for you, but I can't look at my wife in the face and be like, hey, hon, look at this $3,000 bell. Cause she's going to be like, hey, hon, look at this $3,000 home repair we're going to be doing. And it's like, because it's always like a trade off for me. It's like, she tells me I can buy a new bell, but I know it's like, she's going to want something in return. So it's like, I'd rather just save that money for a hunting trip, you know, like, because I look at it, you know, when I was having six bows a year and doing all that stuff, it's like all that money I could have went on like a brown bear hunt or something. All the money I spent on bows when I was competing. If I buy a new bow, I need this, I need this. You know, it was like, I could have went to Greenland, you know, and shot like a muskox, something pretty cool to have it on my wall. Like, hey, I shot a muskox. No, I got half dozen spot hog sights in the basement. It's like, this is dumb.
Yeah. So for the listener, you think about that as you're adding up things, or if you say that you're going to buy something new, maybe do it in two installments and take that money, split it in half, put one over here for a muskox hunt over here for the half, and then when you get the rest of the money, then you know,
yeah, like too with the, I mean, when I was killing, like really started like killing, I had a used bow. I had like a $10 True Glow sight. Might have been like $15 True Glow sight with a thing. It was like, you know, the cheapest flipper or a drop away rest you can get. Like it was like an Alpine drop away, you know, an AAP stabilizer. And it was like, I was killing big deer like with bare basic bone stuff. And it was like, the more I got into it, buying new stuff, it was like, I'm not killing any more big deer because I got this latest and greatest bow. Look at this brand new bow on sight. I didn't kill shit that year. And it was like, break out the old fucking shitty PSE and fucking let it eat, you know?
Yeah. And I think that kind of comes like full circle to like what I was trying to get at with this is like the prioritization of like the mindset or whatever. And, you know, we really do focus on the latest and greatest. And, you know, that goes to, you know, what we're doing with those bow builds to try to see, like, you know, do you need $3,000 worth of equipment on your bow? or can you do it with, you know, and is there a difference?
Like when I got into competing, I literally, it was the bow I was using for hunting. And my coach was like, and anybody that's going to go out and get a coach, just word of advice, anybody that listens to this and say, hey, I'm going to get a coach. If you meet your coach in whatever sport, baseball, someone, and they tell you you need to buy new equipment, run. Get out of Dodge because you don't need new equipment. You need to learn fundamentals before you get the good equipment. So, you know, I said I built up a nice base with hunting bow, and then when I bought actually really nice gear, it was like night and day difference. The bow shot better, I shot better, I felt better. And I was like, and I went from almost winning to winning because I had a nice solid foundation shooting a hunting bow. Form was there, like the mental game was there, and then by the new stuff, I was like, oh, now I'm winning.
I feel like that's like all mental. Like now you felt like you belonged there. There was no imposter syndrome because look at my bow now and I'm going to beat you, instead of like the old Greg who's like, I can't win with this thing, but I'm going to get close.
Well, I always say, you know, the best analogy I ever had was like, if you put a Formula One driver, you know, put me in an F1 car and you put a Formula One driver in a standard car, he's going to outdrive me. It's not the car. It's the fucking person behind the wheel. You know, it's like, you can give me the latest and greatest bow. If your form is shit, well, you're going to be shit. That's just how, you know, a new bow is not going to make you a better killer or shoot better X's. You're better off spending $2,000 on coaching. You know, that's going to pay off in the long haul versus a new bow every year.
Well, I think we can leave them with that, Greg.
A little tidbit.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And I really do hope that everything works out and you're shooting arrows with your arms and not your mouth. Come August. But so if anybody wants to follow along or they haven't figured you out yet, or they wanna donate to your muskox hunt, where can they find you?
Just search my name. It'll pop up. Greg Litzinger or Bow Hunting Team. What do the cool kids say? Google me. You'll find
me. Google me, bitch. Or go see him at the PA TAC. He'll be in the Latitude booth. Ask him for some stickers.
Yeah.
He'd be chasing moments. Yeah. Chasing comments. All right.
It was good. Write your goals down and keep them.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Yeah.